Welcome to Dome Theory. I'm Bobby Manning, and as we do every week, we bring you stories of people going from aspiration to accomplishment. This is episode 31. We have the NBA scheduled to come back on July 31st. The NHL is going to be soon after, getting their thing going on August 1st, it looks like. And then we get into baseball within the next week or so. So it's not going to be too much longer that we don't have sports here. I'm coming to you over the weekend, week after July 4th. So summer's going to start flying, and now all of a sudden, wall-to-wall sports coverage every day. That's what we can hope for. As I've said on this show a million times, I understand the risks, the enormous negative PR that this is associated with, given even today, as I record this on Sunday, a record number of cases have occurred in Florida. More than New York City and the state of New York were seeing way back in April. So if we're seeing this many cases now, and not all that much has changed from what New York City was going through then, what's the excuse for not shutting things down? The NBA has said they're going to be loose with this bubble, where the basketball tournament, which is an annual summer staple that we're seeing now since 2014, John Uger and his friend got this thing going. Back in March, he didn't know if this was going to be able to go on. And they planned a pretty strict bubble that they got in 2 weeks before. They haven't had the ability to leave like the NBA has. And they've made it work so far. Teams have gotten infected, but they've also done a one-and-done elimination tournament that they think is going to give them the benefit over other sports that have to run regular season games, entire postseason best-of-seven formats. Much like baseball, basketball, hockey. And you look at the MLB, and they're going to be traveling. Now, the NBA Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday moved down to Orlando, and everything was going smoothly. Teams got down there, they're wearing the masks, they're checking into their rooms. We haven't heard of any cases on the inside as they've been doing their two-day quarantines. So everything's good. Now, Nikola Jokic was in Europe. He's going to come when he gets his negative test, and there's a certain amount of time between that negative test and another negative test, and then ultimately moving down to the bubble. Russell Westbrook and James Harden didn't travel down with the team. So I look at that and I say, all right, what's going on there? Kawhi Leonard is quarantined with the Clippers. We knew all along that we weren't going to hear a positive case on every single player. Some were going to come out, and some, due to HIPAA, weren't going to ever see the light of day. So all of a sudden, you end up with reports, like in Kawhi's case, a family situation. I'm not calling Kawhi a liar. I'm not saying there's anything deceitful going on here, but maybe he had a positive test. Who knows? Down in Orlando, everything's looking okay. Ben Simmons is tossing fish with his wrong hand, and as Ryan Bernardoni pointed out, missing the ocean. Practices going on the courts there in those function rooms. Ping pong games going on. So this has been full buy-in. Maybe the NBA, after all the flack they've gotten, can catch a little bit of a PR break. But tune to Instagram stories, and here's Rajon Rondo, Motel 6. And Motel 6 responds, "We'll always leave the light on for him." Come on, Motel 6. He's not saying this is a good thing about you. He's saying the Grandestino sucks. And this wasn't the worst that the NBA went through last week. We have food pictures, courtesy of Troy Daniels first, who got a small salad from McDonald's, it appears, with sides wrapped and airplane package bread. I went on my flight to Spain. That kind of looks like that. Isn't helping the NBA's cause. They got clowned incessantly on social media. Now I'll give the NBA a break here. the facts of the story, the chefs weren't able to come in 2 days, so they were getting some packaged food, I guess. And these guys are quarantining on both sides as they break in. But come on. These guys were definitely going to post this. And any food in a plastic container is not going to look as good. Look at that fish strewn across the plate there. I mean, plating is not an option when you're throwing these in plastic containers by the hundreds. Enes Kanter liked his. But Joel Embiid said he's losing 50 pounds. The 76ers are going to like those two posts. Is that dry pasta? Listen, I know you might not have the best chefs in the world there right now, but you can pour the Alfredo sauce on there or something. Or at least give them a little sauce to pour on there. Is that pizza sauce from Domino's? Why has everybody got watermelon mixed in? And there's Joel Embiid after the quarantine. Now, the NBA caught this wave very quickly, as they do. They're very tuned into the Twitter earthquake. They saw everybody laughing at the food that was thrown into these players' laps with nice NBA blankets, of course. And we immediately hear that the NBA is partnering with restaurants, and specifically restaurants from Tillman Fertitta. Yeah, Tillman, you lost your money to China. You lost your money to all your restaurants closing, and now you're going to be feeding the NBA. I never knew Tillman owned Joe's Crab Shack. I used to love Joe's Crab Shack. But I will say, that bucket of crabs and potatoes and corn on the cob is not the best pregame meal. Even a night before. Yes, I had the mussels bucket in Brussels. And let's just say there won't be any basketball played after eating something like that. But what a nice pat on the back to Tillman Fertitta, who has sacrificed so much on the backs of his employees. Tillman and his companies were enormously involved in the layoffs we saw. One that Joel Embiid himself worked early on during this NBA pandemic to curb with his organization. The amount of money that was going to be cut, the amount of jobs that were going to be cut, that kind of thing. And now Tillman's getting rewarded on the back end. So there's the moral of a natural disaster. The rich will get richer. And we'll get to watch basketball and love it. This is the reality around this event. There are an enormous number of things circling this, from a social justice standpoint to a health standpoint, and even a socioeconomic situation. I mean, the players who have backed out have caught tremendous flack from the casual fans. These guys are only losing $90,000 and in return getting safety of mind, body, and family. It was sad seeing Jason Tatum leave his infant son. And if you think about those years in his life that he's going through right now, I mean, you don't get those back. Not that I'm a father or anything. I'm just guessing. But ultimately, I think you just have to hope for the best here. And the NBA, they are circling the wagons big time on the PR front. We were going to get a documentary from J.R. Smith. And who were we more excited to see in the bubble than J.R. Smith? He starts documenting everything on Instagram Live. So Michael Jordan got HD cameras in 1999. And we're going to be watching the NBA bubble in 20 years through hearts and lewd comments scrolling across the screen. Well, that was my hope anyway. And then the NBA shut it down. Come on. Rajon Rondo can talk about Motel 6. J.R. Smith can't document him making this hotel look like one of those high school trips or middle school trips to New York City where you're all in these hotel rooms with your friends. I mean, that was the best thing the NBA has gotten so far in terms of PR. That looks awesome. And if we didn't have health concerns, if we didn't have all these life or death issues going on right outside the doors of Disneyland, this would be the coolest experiment in sports history. They're trying it already at the basketball tournament in Columbus, Ohio, as I mentioned. We have a great interview today with none other than the founder of the basketball tournament, the staple in sports at this point. John Mueger's with us today. We talk to him in just 1 second.
I've been in the bubble for about 20 days, I guess.
Wow.
So lose track of time in the bubble.
So, I guess that's where we'll start. Like, everybody's looking forward to this NBA bubble. What's it been like now, 20 days into yours out there?
It's been a huge adjustment for the first part of it. And by this point, 20 days in, I'm really into a bubble routine. So it's a lot easier now. But we didn't really know what to expect coming out here.
What's your setup like? Hotel, your own room, that kind of thing?
Yeah, everyone's got their own room. It's a 633-room hotel in downtown Columbus. It's about a one-block walk from the arena. So the only time anyone leaves the hotel is to go to the arena to play the games, and they all go under escort. Otherwise, there's a gate outside, so you can't leave ever. And the hotel connects to the convention center here in Columbus, so we have a huge amount of space to walk around. And we have four practice courts and four different rooms. We have tons of different team rooms where teams can gather throughout the convention center. We have our own staff rooms, and it's a huge space. So it's a 630-room hotel, but it's also all of that.
So you're going to be there through the end of the month, Adam? I think the last TVTs usually went to like the end of July, right? That's about the same for this year?
No, this year because of this model, the quarantine model, it's a 11-day tournament, so it started July 4 and it'll end on July 14. So I'll be here for, I guess, 6 more days.
All right, yeah. Now, I read about the tournament, and that kind of does seem to be the advantage you think you have this year over some of the other leagues and, you know, sports that are trying to do this, is you're basically going to be in and out. I mean, you've had teams that have been eliminated due to positive tests, and you know, once you're eliminated in your game, you're kind of out of there. So you kind of see that as being an advantage, huh?
I think our format is naturally kind of lends itself to what's happening right now because it's single elimination, and our teams, when they lose, they don't have to come back to play like a regular season schedule.
Yeah,
a lot shorter time commitment for everybody. And the longer they're here, the closer they are to the championship. So it's easy to get compliance in the beginning for it, and it's kind of easy to keep compliance throughout because they get closer and closer to the end. Whereas, like, if you're going somewhere for 3 or 4 months, it's a real different challenge to keep compliance at the same level for that amount of time.
This is Dome Theory Podcast, Sports and Culture. We have John Mueger with us, the founder of the basketball tournament that got started in 2014. And it's been a staple in American sports now. Can you believe that? A staple in American sports every summer. Now, I feel like if you asked, I don't know, 100 people who are into basketball, more than half at this point, I'd have to guess, would know what this is, being the dominance that it holds over the summer calendar. Now, that's going to be a little different this year, obviously, as, you know, talk of all the other leagues getting going is underway already. But as you said, this is just through the 14th, so you do kind of have that, you know, collective attention, as sports have been off the books now, besides golf and maybe a few other things overseas. Does it shock you at all at how fast this is growing? I mean, it's been less than a decade, and you already have something that's on ESPN1 and just has such a hold over the summer, the sports calendar.
Yeah, if I take a step back ever and view it, it's kind of, it is a little bit of a shock to see how big it's become. because it really just started as a text message thread amongst friends. The idea was between Dan and I back in like 2011. And when we were thinking of the concept, we were trying to figure out what it would look like and who would play. And we never in our wildest dreams thought that the college player of the year that year when we were conceiving of it, like Jimmer Fredette, would one day be playing in it. Well, he's still in his 20s. And we just had no idea that that players like Aaron Kraft or Jared Sullinger would play in it. And the caliber of player that play in TBT was shocking from the first morning that we tipped off. But I would be kind of interested if you did a poll of sports fans, whether they'd heard of it. I think some people, you know, equate it to just like summer basketball or something. Oh yeah, that $1 million tournament. So it definitely does seem like more and more people have heard of it now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing of summer. Baseball is usually going on around this time, but we know the direction baseball has gone in terms of popularity, at least among young people. It's got to be something that people just run into at this point if they're looking for something to watch over the summer and then maybe get hooked in. I know my connection was the Syracuse angle. I went to Syracuse. You know, I covered the basketball team out there during the winter, and all of a sudden their site I'm writing for, Noon's Magician, over there at SB Nation, over the summertime doesn't really have anything to write about, and all of a sudden Boeheim's Army is one of the biggest teams in this tournament every single summer right from the very beginning. I want to talk a little bit about that since we're on the subject. A team like that with a fan base like Syracuse's seems to have just played like a monumental part in raising this league status. I know some other college teams have had theirs, Ohio State among, you know, quite a few others that have joined the fold now. I know I was watching Clemson's the other night. That college fandom sort of just transferred over naturally.
I know. Like you said, there's already this infrastructure of media people and others who are covering the team throughout the other time of the year, and they're all just sitting at home in the summer without anything really to write about aside from a player who's going through combines or drafts or recruiting. So that was a lot more powerful than we thought it would be. And we had no, I mean, the fan base at Syracuse is just insane. I had no idea it was like that before TBT. Wichita State last year, 7,500 people at the first game. The Ohio State fan base showing up for their team is like West Virginia. There are so many pockets of VCU fans who are just fanatical about these players well beyond when they go to college. And that's really been like the whole growth story for TBT. It's like it's picking up fans one alumni network at a time. So I think we've spent maybe $50,000 in advertising and marketing in the past 7 years. So our whole strategy is just to get in front of these affinity groups of fans as much as possible.
I think of a guy like Eric Devendorf, too, who's sort of become the face of Boeheim's Army over the last couple of years because he's just back there year in, year out. And you have had some of these guys who are repeat competitors in this tournament. And, you know, for someone like me who has watched this every year, I guess I sort of build that recognition there. I wasn't as much of a Syracuse fan when he played there, more in the years when I started going to school there around like 2015, 2016. All of a sudden, this guy who played for Syracuse years back, and I know their fans, who were always fans, had that recognition of him. But for me, all of a sudden, this guy, Eric Devendorf, becomes associated with Boeheim's Army. That's very cool because, you know, all the problems we talk about with college basketball now and where that sport is going. You know, we have the Ivy League news today, which was a big deal, and just court cases, FBI investigations, one and dones, all that kind of stuff. All of a sudden, it feels like TBT kind of has that allure that college basketball used to have, where you'd tune in for 3-4 years in a row, and quite a few of the same guys would be competing year in and year out.
Yeah, as simple as it sounds, TBT is just fun. Like, the sports sometimes gets mired down with all the coverage of being a business, and you hear that, you know, players when they go to free agency or get traded, they always say, well, it's a business and all that. And TBT, the way the teams are constructed, the players who are there are the ones who want to be there. They're playing with who they want to play with. So immediately the product is very different. It's not a job. They're there because they love their teammates. They want to compete with them, and they want to be there. And then the fans, like, just immediately pick up on that. And we cut out a lot of that kind of sports business that's involved in so much of professional sports or elsewhere, that these properties that are, you know, massive, massive monopolies making tons of money, we're not one of those. So, but I think it's great, and it's more of a fun, casual fandom as a result.
I think of this trope in life where people go, "I wish I invented that." And for me as a writer, it's more of like, "I wish I wrote that." When I see a great article, when I see something that really impresses me, I know I saw this music article a couple weeks ago about this perfect quarantine album, Freddie Gibbs's, and I'm like, "Oh, I was thinking that myself." And then, you know, people look at Uber and they're like, "I wish I invented that." This is something I think a lot of sports fans look at and are like, wow, that's just so simple. This one and done elimination tournament, put your teams together, have a money prize at the end of it, have some themes for teams. You just boiled it down to one word, fun. Take me back to the early days of this idea formulating. You said it was on a text message thread. Like, what was that process like of actually coming up with this and then making the move to execute it?
Yeah, I had a friend since seventh grade. I've always kept in touch with Dan Friel, and he was in New Orleans. I was in LA at the time, and it was a Sunday morning, and we started texting back and forth, and we'd always like come up with ideas, as I'm sure you and your friends do, just to kick them around, and they're for the most part awful and things you laugh about. But this idea started on a Sunday morning. It was, what do you think would happen if you put $50 million on the table, and you said anyone in the world could play for it? And we were trying to think of, you know, would NBA teams play? Would college basketball teams play as constructed? Would LeBron play? Like, would this blow up? Would that blow up the sports landscape? And if not, you know, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't players do it? Like, would contracts and agents really keep them out of it? And why is that the case? And it just sort of became this obsession. And it took me about 4 months of going to a coffee shop on my off days, beating it out and like figuring out exactly how to make something like that work. And it was just such an immediately simple and appealing idea that it was something that I became obsessed with. So from that point on, it took about 2 years of talking to people in the sports business, talking to potential broadcasters, talking to potential sponsors. Everyone loved the idea immediately when they heard it. It was always like, "Oh, who are you to pull it off?" And, you know, I'm not giving you any money at this point until I see what it looked like. So we had to put on like a short version of it or smaller version of it in Philadelphia, $500,000, winner take all in 2014. And ESPN immediately saw it. Within about 45 minutes, they emailed me, somebody I'd never heard from before, saying, "Hey, we'd love to stream the championship in ESPN3. And we did that. And the game was awesome. We lucked out Team Barstool against Notre Dame. Barstool has a lot of followers, so they had a great crowd there. Notre Dame won, so that solidified the alumni angle. And from there, we talked immediately about it being a TV property. And here we are kind of 6 to 7 years later.
I remember that first one because of just how open it was. I mean, I think like anybody could put a team together and kind of show up there, right? You just had to have like the organizational structure, the fans. Like, what was that process like of getting teams together and on board for that very first one?
We were really lucky that a friend of a friend connected us to Zach Lowe, and he was willing to launch the concept on March 1st, 2014. And we foolishly launched the website the same day, which is an absolute disaster. Never, ever do that if you're doing something like this. And there's so many problems. It was a nightmare. But
too many teams or what?
The teams came kind of easy, but just it's like website problems. You know, like, you got to clear your cash. I've been clearing my cash for 8 years. He got us a lot of notoriety right off the bat. His article was very suggestive about the types of teams that might enter, because we had always thought about what kinds of teams would enter, and alumni teams were always right up there. And like, sure enough, like the Cornell Sweet 16 team from, you know, 2011 or something like that, 2010 entered, and Notre Dame's alumni team entered, and we wound up getting, there's a 32 team field, and we wound up getting way more than enough teams. So like, there's an underground network of cash basketball tournaments in the summer and other times of years, and they're usually for like, you know, $10,000, maybe at the most $25,000. So when these people no one had heard of before just threw $500,000 on the table, it drew like immediate interest from the basketball community. So it was a lot easier than I thought it was. And next thing you know, 8:30 in the morning, you know, Marshall Henderson coming off of just graduating from Ole Miss and Lakeem Warwick are suiting up together on the same team. And it was really shocking.
At what moment did you feel like this is going to work? Because I know there was probably a lot of uncertainty early on, like how could we actually make this work? Is this going to be on TV? You know, are we going to have teams, the website, all that stuff? Like when, at what moment did you feel like, all right, we got something here that's going to work?
There have been a lot of that moment when they walked in the gym at 8:30 in the morning when Marshall Henderson came in was like a huge, huge moment. Because I'd been sitting with the idea for like 2 years at that point. And you just never know, like, if people are going to show up or care about it. And, you know, we always heard that more than half the people thought that it wasn't even, no one really had the money and, like, it wasn't a real thing, but they came and played anyway. And so, like, every year there's a new step up for us. Like, that year it was getting the caliber of player and the amazing championship game between Notre Dame and Barstool. And the year after that, I think it was the Syracuse Center. And then we saw like a whole sea of orange in the crowd clapping, you know, from the tip to the first field goal. And, you know, the next year it was like a VCU type team. And then last year it was Wichita State packing 7,500 fans in the same bill. It was just like, that was insane. And then the Elam ending, the adoption of Elam ending, and then the All-Star game doing that. And I don't know. Every year it seems to be we hit another step.
So I like that you mentioned Nick Elam, the Elam ending. You've called you guys a bit of a disruptor to the sport as you got a few years in. You know, you want to try interesting things. I love how Zach Lowe jumped on it early too, because that's sort of like his mantra. He's willing to jump at the experiments, the wacky ideas, all these different formats. He was talking about like play-in tournaments and the group stages for the NBA. And when you look at the TBT, you guys have been willing to try quite a number of experimental things. And that Elam ending was like number one among them. How did that come into play? When did you meet Nick? And how did those two different ideas kind of mesh together?
I think it's 2016. We got an email 3 days after our championship at the info@thetournament.com inbox, and it was from Nick, and it was a 67-page PowerPoint deck, and it was outlining what it was referred to then in the deck as the hybrid duration format.
Oh God!
and it laid out. His resume was attached to, and he was Mensa, so he was a genius. He was a middle school principal in Ohio, and then he was a groundskeeper for the Cincinnati Reds by night. And like those three things were like, oh my God, who is this guy? But you immediately wanted this. I'm a basketball. I always grew up a basketball fan and played basketball. I love it. And I consider myself a purist, and I always want to dismiss crazy ideas that would change the game to that extent. But the more I read about it, the more it made it's so much sense. And it was an issue we were already looking at and trying to figure out a way around, because we had had so many games like that. There were between 4 and 12 points of a spread, and it just grew, especially with our format. The stakes are so high, and it just grew into a huge foul fest, and it was awful, and the result was inevitable anyway. So, like, as a tournament organizer for the first time, it definitely fit. It addressed this problem that we identified and fit this need of ours. So we got to know Nick. Our biggest objective was to figure out if this man is insane or not and do some background work on him. So we talked to him on the phone like several times over 6 months and got very comfortable with him. And then we renamed it because we didn't think the hybrid duration format would be a great one for fans to grasp onto. And then we put it in play in 2017 in the play-in event. And like, to our surprise, players and refs and coaches and us, we all really loved it immediately. So it was a great fit for our format because they're so high stakes, and that just throws gas on the fire at the end of every game.
The marketing is definitely key. The Elam ending stuck quickly. I wonder, for you, the purist who didn't want to see the game change all that much, what sold you on it ultimately? And, you know, who were some of the decision makers that said, all right, we're going to go in this direction, even though it does change the game quite a bit? And it definitely sparks debate even to this day. I was talking to a friend from Syracuse on the phone earlier, and I was telling him I was going to interview you, and he was like, yeah, that Elam ending, I don't know. I don't know if I could see that in the NBA, but the fact that we're even having that conversation, All-Star game, NBA maybe in the future, it's crazy just a couple years later. And you think about the way it changes things, you know, no overtimes. I think of situations when teams are on this big comeback trail and all of a sudden there's 0.4 seconds on the clock and you can't even physically get a shot up. There's a lot of problems with late game situations that it solves when you really start thinking about it.
Yeah, there are. It's interesting. We would hear that all the time from people. Like, people at first said they hated it. Maybe it was like 50-50 when the first year rolled it out. And then once people start liking it, they say that. They always say that same thing, which is, yeah, it's cool, but I can never see XYZ doing it. It's cool, but I can never see college basketball. But it's cool, but you can't gamble really easily with it. You know, I don't know if it's cognitive dissonance or what, but it's like people accept it, but they don't really want to push it that far forward. But seeing it play out the All-Star game this year was like was an absolutely huge moment for it, because there are 8 million people watching that game. And like the ratings of the All-Star game typically peak in the second quarter and then drop off. This year, the second quarter ratings were like 7.2 million and the fourth quarter was 8 million. So it totally caught fire and it reversed ratings trends. And being in the building for that with 20,000 people there, they were on their feet for the fourth quarter, for the end of the fourth quarter, cheering for charges, like cheering Kyle Lowry taking charges. And like, it wasn't entirely the Elam ending, because the players were so competitive, like Chris Paul and everyone else there. And they did a great job building stakes with that charity angle, having people on the court too. But the game just like completely flipped from this defenseless dunk fest to an incredibly gritty battle where people were cheering totally different things in basketball than they normally cheer. And the Elam ending was a part of that. So, you know, I think it's easier and easier for people to see it being adopted everywhere now.
The moments stick out so much from that game, too. When they get to within 2 or 3 points, I think it was, are we going to go for a 2? Are we going to go for a 3? LeBron launching that court from that shot from nearly half court, the Davis foul inside, and then just the scrambling defense on some of those perimeter plays. Like, you can just think of all that vividly in your head, and that's what I love most about it, is it gives every game a big ending, you know, a final shot. Forget the free throws. Like, it's always going to end on a free throw some way, somehow, whether it's the clock running out as teams are shooting free throws both ways, or as it did there, Davis taking the final one. I just love it so much. That game sold me on it. I don't know how anyone else who was watching that didn't see it and go, all right, I love it. They did take a little bit of a different spin on it, though, with the three quarters, each one being a different competition of its own, and then the collective score becoming the whole fourth quarter. It wasn't quite the exact same TBT format, was it?
It was the hybrid duration format, which we renamed the Elam ending. So the premise of the whole thing is really that you start with a clock and you end with a target score. Mm-hmm. So they obviously stopped with the clock sooner, and they set a target score differently, but it's the same exact format. This is actually a professional league in Canada that just announced they adopted the Elam ending too, and they're doing the same thing. Except their target score is going to be +9 from the leading team score. But the premise of how you set all those numbers is you want to try to fit it into the same time-lapse window, but the game would normally take to play, only with that mode to finish it.
It's funny because I actually think the NBA would be the perfect league to adopt that, just because of how prolific everybody is across the board, making shots offensively, you know, you think of some guys being worse shooters than others, but realistically, everybody's hitting open shots at that level. College makes me a little more scared, being a Syracuse fan. I remember the 55-52 grinded out against Michigan State a couple years ago, knowing that Syracuse wouldn't have won that game if they need to hit another shot down the stretch. That's just the nature of college, and then high school, forget about it. But who knows who's going to adopt this down the line? It's interesting you say they're going to take that up. When did you first hear that the NBA was going to try that for the All-Star game, and what was your reaction to that?
I think I first heard in maybe 2.5 weeks before. I was pretty surprised, ecstatic, and I didn't really believe it, because so many things are rumors until they actually happen, and I've learned to sort of to mute any enthusiasm in my life until it actually happens. So that was, it was cool to hear, but I sort of doubted it. And I thought, well, it's probably kind of a little too good to be true. So I didn't want to get too excited about it, but, I heard really, really close to the game, and it came together so quickly. And then they put Chris Paul front and center to kind of explain it to people and talk about it. And we've gotten close with him. He came to TBT last year, and he and his brother reached out to us at our info@thetournament.com inbox 3 years ago because they loved TBT so much, just to say they loved it and they'd love to be involved in some way. And so we've gotten close to him, and he was obviously the key reason why that happened, because he's such a powerful voice in basketball.
And I know he was leading a team this year in the tournament, and you know he probably was very involved in the organization in some way, being one of the leaders of one of the teams. Him being one of the voices on the NBA side, sort of leading this comeback to NBA play, and the sort of first step that TBT has taken in the post-COVID world of starting basketball up, was there a lot of conversation about, you know, how TBT is doing this, what the things the NBA could be doing in response to that, and, you know, that kind of conversation about just sports coming back in general?
There's been no conversation between, like, us and the NBA or anything like that. We've been in our own world entirely for the past 4 months. I think everyone has been, but yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're having calls and I'm just left out. But that guy would read once in a while, like the White House would have a phone call with the heads of the major sports leagues, and there would be like 17 leagues, and we obviously wouldn't be on there. And I'm like, what are they talking about? Because, you know, we have a great plan right now that's probably going to work. If anyone wants to reach out, then, you know, we would love to share information and get information from them, because we're all dealing with the same problem.
Yeah.
And we'd be happy to share everything. We have so much data now coming out of this 20-day period that, you know, we've had great luck so far and great success with our program. And there's a college who reached a Division I college reached out to us the other day and said, you know, we're trying to think of how to do this in a risk reduced way. Can you help us? And we're always happy to share that stuff. And I think people should just be, I don't know, more collaborative with these sort of things. And it's kind of harder for us to like reach out to the NBA and say, hey, what are you guys doing with your bubble?
Well, I mean, you sort of had yours together before they did in some way. I mean, the NBA's is still coming together as it is. The funny one last night was the food. Troy Daniels posting the, I'd say, middle school style food delivery that they had. And all of a sudden, the NBA's bouncing back 2 days later saying, it's going to be much different. Don't worry. I guess, what's the food been like in your bubble? I'll start there.
It's pretty good. They cycle through like every 5 days or so. So I think for players, it's probably really good because they don't see everything as frequently as we do. But for me, I just had the chicken fajitas for the fifth time. I'm ready. I'm ready to not have them anymore.
But, oh, that's too bad.
No, they're really good though. It's just a repetition of going down.
No. Yeah. It stinks when things get old.
Yeah, but overall, the food has been, it's been great. Like it's just very first class. It's a Hyatt, and they're dedicating their whole hotel and all of their kitchen and all of their amenities, their laundry to us. So it's just sort of this amazing first class experience, but I can't enjoy it at all because I'm just waiting for test results every night and morning, and that's so stressful.
How often are you getting tests?
Well, for players and staff are all different. For staff, we all do a mandatory 5-day quarantine. We all do a 24-hour isolation period before. So you show up, you get tested, and then you hide in your room and get meals delivered to you until you get the results of that. And then you come out, but you still have to live in these quarantine rules. And that's been like the most fun and challenging and tricky part is developing these quarantine rules. And you're doing it based on articles you read about the virus and science and everything. And so, like, we have mandatory mask wearing because I remember seeing this story about a hairdresser in Springfield, Missouri, who worked symptomatic for 8 days and wore a mask, and all of her clients wore a mask, and she exposed up to 140 people with it, and none of them got it. And that really stuck with me. So I'm like, okay, everyone's wearing a mask at all times. Everyone's social distancing. And teams will never cross over and hang out with each other because that's the worst thing. Because if somebody comes down with it on a team, we got to get rid of the team. But if people are crossing over and talking to each other, you have to shut the whole event down. So to answer your question, though, testing for players, they have to pass 5 negative tests over an 8-day period in order to step on the court to compete. And in that time, they start out at home, and then they're in isolation, and then they start practicing as a team. So once they start practicing as a team, a single positive means the team is out. So they test on day 1, 3, 4, 5, and then they play in day 6, and then they test again on day 7.
I thought that test would be the biggest deterrent in keeping people in their house and actually preventing people from leaving their house and taking all the precautions. I mean, that thing, it just looks scary. Every time I see it, I cringe. I don't think I need to explain it for people.
the nasal swab?
Yes.
Oh, we don't use it.
Oh, all right. You got something different.
Yeah, we have a saliva test. So you spit in a test tube.
Now, that is huge.
It's much... Given the repetition and the frequency, it's absolutely essential because there's a lot of fear about the nasal swab.
Yeah.
So we'll only use the nasal. There's the PGA Tour has a mobile testing lab that we tapped into. It happens to be 15 minutes away from us in Ohio. So they use the nasal swab. So we'll use that in emergency case scenarios when you need like a 3-hour turnaround. But aside from that, we're all saliva based testing.
Now, it's crazy to think about. We talked about the NBA All-Star Game, which was in February and March. Sports get canceled. It was just that big of a turnaround from that exciting period to the, like, when will sports come back ever period. When you saw the NBA cutting things off, March Madness getting canceled, that you being a big college fan like you are, and then your tournament being just a couple months away, at that time were you concerned that it just wasn't going to happen, period, or did you just jump right into planning some of the things that could happen if you were able to do it?
Yeah, I mean, one morning I'd wake up and I'd be like, oh, there's probably going to be, you know, one case a day in the country by the time we get to summer. If you look at the trajectory in, like, South Korea or Germany or wherever, like, they seem to have made it very manageable, like, we'll be fine. And then the next day you're like, oh, I guess we'll take the whole year off. There's absolutely no way we'll be able to do this. So we kind of built our plan optimistically as if we'd be more on that Germany, China, South Korea track where it would be like 100 cases a day in the country. And lo and behold, we're pulling it off when there are 50,000 plus cases a day out there. So it's like it's made it really much – it's put a lot of pressure and stress on the plan, but – thankfully, it's held up well. I mean, we've found a lot of positive cases out there, but most of them for us were at home, so they never actually came to Columbus. So the at-home testing thing was really, really essential for us. But yeah, I was all over the map, like everyone in the world. Like no one knew what this was, like what it meant. All of a sudden, everyone had to stay at home and shut everything down.
Yeah,
it was just a huge change. So like we didn't really know what we were dealing with for a long time.
Was there trepidation in attempting it? Because I know the NBA has been criticized to some degree for trying this, and they're in a different situation heading into Florida with all the cases that are going on there and, you know, actually being in the bubble for a much longer period of time. But on the other hand, I mean, your players aren't your employees. They're just people who are doing this for fun, for money, for charity, all that different kind of stuff. Was it tricky navigating whether you should or shouldn't do this?
No, that was never. It was like there was an immediate, strong, very, very visceral, strong reaction on our team that we had to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, we had to do it for ourselves. We had to do it for our players. Like, we are underdogs. Our players are underdogs. We fight for them, and we put this on for them. And, like, this was an obstacle no one thought we could overcome. And we knew, like, from day one that we wanted to do it. We wanted to overcome it. And, like, we wouldn't have done it if we couldn't do it in a way that would satisfy our health and safety plan, which we started building in March. So the big thing that we had no control over was testing and whether we'd have access to tests. But once we had that, like, we knew we wanted to plant the flag and we wanted to go for it. And so I think we just had this immediate sense of purpose to go out and do it. And it was like, it was very nerve-wracking and anxiety producing to make that decision, because, you know, you're, in some ways, the way that it's framed a lot, you're like putting people's lives on the line potentially, because some people have very adverse reactions to it. So you want to make it very responsible, but by the same token, like, there's a really fighting spirit in us and as a small business where we just wanted to take it on.
Who are you, I wonder if you're going to answer this question. Who are you liking so far in it? Who do you think's going to win it all this year? Who's looking good early so far to you? I know Overseas Elite had that 4-year run that finally came to an end last year. I'm looking at Boeheim's Army. I know they lost Tyler Lydon. They still have Devendorf. They still have Trish. They still have some, you know, Malachi Richardson joining the fold. I'm hoping this could be the year maybe they get there. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, before 3 hours ago, I would have said Carmen Crew, but they got knocked off by the Illinois alumni team, House of Pain. That team is phenomenal. I mean, their energy is unbelievable. Mike Dom is like a prolific scorer. They Marquette alumni team has been in TBT now for 5 years, and every year they advance further and further. And last year they made it all to the championship game. And they lost to Carmen's Crew, the Ohio State team, in the championship game. So, like, they look unbelievably strong and focused this year. So, I'd be surprised if the Golden Eagles alumni loses this year. But there are just so many. We have 10 teams left, and they're all just, like, the money team is one of them. The Floyd Mayweather team, they're just unbelievable. These teams are just insane. So I have no idea how it's going to go. Boeheim's Army, that Devendorf is the prototypical TBT player. Trish, I've always loved his game. They added those pieces this year, so I don't know. Anyone can win.
I love that. I mean, I was describing Devendorf as that earlier. Like, he has become a TBT player. Like, he's handling the ball. He's taking a lot of the shots. Like, he understands the way the game functions, the flow of the game. It's crazy that, I mean, this league is less than a decade old, and now we're already talking about the style of play, what kind of players succeed in there. Like, it's unbelievable. Great chat with you here today, John Mueger. I guess the last one I got for you is Joe Johnson, some of those types joining this year. Is that the steps into the future, getting more high profile names to come up here? Like, what are some of your ambitions in years to come to see this league continue to grow?
That's always great. It's because the same way, like, a new college alumni team draws more fans, those higher profile people draw fans too. But it's really rare to find someone like Joe who's willing to play, because they really have to take, it's a huge risk, because these players have tremendous brand names. They have that cachet of having played in the NBA, and then they're going to go out and expose themselves to guys who, in some cases, no one's heard of before, who are 23 to 27, who just play unbelievable basketball, and they do not care who you are. And so, like, for Joe Johnson to do that with his own name and his own reputation just says a lot about him as a competitor. And I always really respect that about people like that. So, like, it's hard to find people like that, though, who are willing to put their name on the line like that. So I think the next chapter for us is where we were last year, which is starting to pack those 7,500 to 10,000 seat arenas in the summer, because I know this property and the product that we put on is can justify it.
I'm looking at your Twitter page right now. Someday the winning team will earn a slot in the NBA each year. Are you holding to that line?
Yeah, I think our property, the last place team in the NBA should be relegated to TBT, and the only way back in the NBA should be to win it. So, like, what a great fan experience TBT would be if it were 4 weeks in the summer and the winning team got a spot in the NBA and the worst team in the NBA had to play their way out of TBT. Like, that would just be the best. And that, therefore, like, any sports fan in the world could create a team and end up in the NBA. It would be the best.
Listen, I know they stink, but the NBA still needs the New York Knicks. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
All right, John. I guess before we go, thank you, Peter Flaherty, for bringing you here today. Working with him in Kituat last summer. He's a staple down there with the Kituat Cavaliers. ESPN just wrote about him and that lost season that they had down there. I think 1 year ago exactly, I was probably sitting behind home plate with him. So thank you to him. Shout out to him.
Yeah, I'd like to shout him out, too, as a great nephew, a legendary nephew. And he and I have been close forever. So, yeah, it's a great connection to have made.
All right, John. Good luck with the rest of the tournament there. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy.